Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for March 20th, 2011. I'm David McLaughlin, and with me, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, welcome from Atlanta.
Yes, and welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yeah, I got a good show with a lot of different topics tonight. In our second half hour, Jane Bradshaw, president of the Georgia Young Democrats, is going to tell us about Crossover Day, the upcoming convention, and some other things. But until that time, we're going to just work our way around the South. And since it's the 21st century, probably the quickest way to work your way around any part of the country is through the television. Wouldn't y'all agree?
Yes.
Yeah, well, even though this is not a Southern-specific article, it just caught my attention. It was actually in the February campaign elections magazine, but I think the study has been posted elsewhere, about the viewing habits of Democrats and Republicans. Now, of course, people that do TV ad buys love this because they know how to get in front of primary voters and then, I guess, down the road, swing voters with some of the independent shows, if you will, because that box was there too. But I found these charts very interesting because they're the top two programs for Democrats and Republicans are very obvious, Keith Olbermann and Glenn Beck. I'll let you pick who's who on that. But then after that, there was just no real, you know, discernible why Democrats would like this better than Republicans and vice versa. Catherine, what did you find was the most ironic listing?
I think that the Republicans seem to like the Big Bang Theory, which is, you know, sort of an atheist-minded, you know, science-oriented sitcom, I guess. I've never watched it, but that's what I understand it to be. I thought that was odd. And then I thought that Democrats watching Courtney and Chloe take Miami was a little strange considering the rest of the list. But there's no accounting for taste, really. Doesn't. I mean, I find the whole thing a little bit interesting. I'm surprised because a lot of the things that I like to watch are on both lists. And my favorite show, or one of my favorite shows that I actually record every week, is the second most popular of the Republican shows, so The Amazing Race.
Yeah.
So I don't.
Catherine, you know, we talk about that, how you and I both end up watching that. And the thing is, you know, of course, we have this Republican or this view of Republicans, hey, they're these people that don't like, you know, necessarily new foreign experiences. And this is a show that's about going around the world and experiencing all these different cultures. You know, if we ever encounter some Republicans, we can just start talking about The Amazing Race with them, and we'll have common ground on something. Isn't that good? Tim, when you looked at this list, what did you think?
Well, I thought it was a pack of nonsense. There is not one show on the top 15 Democratic list that I even watch. I do watch two of the GOP shows. I religiously watch American Idol every week. And then the thing about independents, they say, well, they like something like Kitchen Nightmares, and neither Democrats or Republicans. Well, I adore Gordon Ramsay, and I watch everything that he's on. So, you know, where do they get this stuff? I mean,
it's who they people preferred. Experian Simmons did the research. One I saw in the independent list was NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. I've never watched the truck series. I know people drive pickup trucks around just like they drive cars.
You know,
but this is real popular with independents. And, you know, they always come out and they talk about the NASCAR vote, and then Democrats will every once in a while do forays. I know Bob Graham, you know, had a car painted up. And I always think it's just, you know, a big waste of money. But maybe this chart here is saying that Bob Graham and others that have done this stuff, I think Mark Warner did a foray into this medium, if you will, they're not as crazy as I thought.
Then what would they even want this data for political advertising during campaign seasons on to target certain shows, figuring their favorite audience might be tuning in? I mean, that's all I could figure out.
Yeah, but particularly primaries. You want to target programs where your voters are. And so that's, I guess that would help some, but now a lot of this is obviously prime time or cable buys that you might actually have to buy the program, and that's very expensive compared to just targeting at the local level, because those ads are far less likely to be where you can buy just the local area. I mean, you know, Friday Night Lights, a show about a Texas football team, like a county over where George W. Bush grew up. You think that'd be a Republican show, right, guys?
Yeah.
It's a Democratic show, you know, so.
Look, American Idol, the Republicans supposedly like that show a lot, but I've seen the president on there a couple of times. I mean, you know, come on.
Yeah, obviously ratings are ratings. If you just have massive numbers of eyeballs, you're going to get blue, red, and purple eyeballs. Now, one show that did not make the list that really surprised me, Sarah Palin's Alaska. Wouldn't you think that'd be on the reddest of reds?
Yeah. It was a flash in the pan type thing, though. Its ratings tanked before it went off because it turned out not to be what everybody thought it was going to be. You know, I mean, I didn't care that Sarah Palin was catching her daughter, you know, with her door shut and her boyfriend at their house there and stuff like that. I thought this was supposed to be a wilderness show about Alaska, and they turned it into this reality thing that just, at the end, I don't think anybody liked it.
Yeah, and I think I saw 2 minutes of it when I'd recorded, like, Man versus Wild, and 2 minutes of it were stuck at the end, and I checked out for 2 minutes, and that was plenty enough for my field.
It was not a very good show, and it just didn't get the rating. It got the huge ratings the first night, and then that was it.
Yeah, well, I don't know what we'll learn. Yeah, I mean, you didn't even get 2 minutes on the end of Man versus Wild, right, Catherine?
Nope.
You didn't miss nothing,
well,
Catherine.
Yeah, that 2 minutes didn't hook me for any more minutes, to say the least. And so, I don't know what we'll do with this, but, you know, once again, Tim, you're right. There's a Top Chef Masters is Democratic, but Kitchen Nightmares, which sounds like a very similar format, don't watch either, is an independent show. And so, there's no rhyme or reason. I will say this. There's a lot of HGTV kind of shows on the Republican list for whatever reason. Your What Not to Wear and Property Virgins and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know what, there's probably something more here. It's like they end up surveying more Republican women or they got more of this part of the country. I noticed there was like an HBO show or two on the Democratic list. I don't have HBO, but apparently maybe you'd find more HBO viewers or Democrats for whatever reason. So there's no commercials on that. So what good is it to know who's liking HBO if you can't put ads on it? So there's no political value. Well,
the hated Bill Maher is on HBO, so the Republicans are not going to want to frequent that network too much.
And that's the independent. He's an independent favorite for what it's worth.
Uh-huh.
So, and obviously there's probably a lot of shows that obviously have very good ratings that aren't listed because if you have to volunteer your favorite show and you're a, 50-year-old adult, you're probably not going to go, oh, Jersey Shore. I mean, you're going to. So, therefore, there's probably some people leaving out some popular shows they're kind of embarrassed to say they watch. Yeah, well, let's go ahead and move on to some more meatier political topics. And to me, South Carolina, well, you know, it's probably been the most interesting week for South Carolina since we had Jennifer Reed on of the Indigo Journal, but I'm sure if they've got their blog back going, they're all over this kind of stuff. We got their governor and their lieutenant governor in scandal. Catherine, who should we pick on first?
Let's pick on the lieutenant governor first.
Kennard. Okay, well, Mr. Ard, he has been cited with 92 ethics violations. I mean, it sounds like a misprint, 92 ethics violations. And basically, it's just him just spending campaign cash on his personal items. I noticed $800 of women's clothing listed. Hopefully that's for his wife or daughter, not himself. That would be a whole other scandal. And then also he decided that he wanted to go see the SEC championship game. I'm sure there's a lot of people across the South that would love to do that, but they wouldn't do it necessarily on their campaign cash's dime, if you will. Catherine, since you picked this one, what do you make of this?
Well, according to comments from his representative, or his, you know, someone from his office, the SEC tournament expenses were legitimate because he was invited, allegedly, to attend as the lieutenant governor of South Carolina, and apparently South Carolina election laws allow him to use campaign funds to for personal appearances as the lieutenant governor. So, but I'd like to see that invitation. The dress for his wife was for the inauguration, and he says that was a requirement. Now, I have to tell you that if I had donated $500 to his campaign and found out that, you know, most of it was spent on a dress for his wife to wear the inauguration, I don't think I would be very happy about that.
Catherine, it sounds like he's off the hook on two of them. What about the other nine?
Well, I don't think he's off the hook on the dress.
I'm just saying. I mean, that's the thing. He's explained away two. What about the other 90? This is,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. And each one of those carries a $2,000 fine.
Wow.
I hope that SEC tournament was worth $184,000.
Well, unless he was an Auburn fan, it probably wasn't worth it because South Carolina did a great job getting there, but they didn't win, so it was kind of unsatisfying in the end. Tim, what do you think of this story?
You know, just one scandal after another over there with GOP officials, ain't it, guys? And isn't it a little odd that state is so red that they just keep electing these people? Don't the voters, does it seem to y'all like the voters just don't care? It's kind of scratching my head about it because these aren't just scandals. I mean, these are like scandals on steroids these guys have. Governors disappearing to South America and not just one or two ethics charges, but 92 and, oh, just on and on and on and on.
Yeah, and you know, almost part of me thinks maybe because the Republicans, then of course, then the people that look and shake their heads are just like, we can't trust government. And of course, that's a Republican narrative, even though the Republicans. So maybe the next wave of Republicans gets inoculated by the current Republican scandals because, you know, it's just, oh, what do you expect? Government ruined them. You know, that old tired narrative. Can I speak truth to that?
Well, I think there's just a lot of people who just think all politicians are crooks. And they're all going to do stuff like that. And so what difference does it make whether they're Democrats or Republicans? I just think that's sort of a general – I mean, I think people say that all the time.
Not
us, because we're inside baseball, but just your average person. They always think that politicians are in it for themselves or they're going to figure out a way to, you know, make the system work for them.
No, let's just look beyond politics for a minute. If, say, 45 of these allegations are true and stick, that man has no business being the lieutenant governor of a state.
Not at all.
The bottom line.
Yeah, and I think that there's a chance that he, you know, gets drummed out of office on this one. And because, you know, Jennifer has been on the show about a month ago or more, and she said that this thing was brewing. And so it's on and it keeps hitting. He's got an extension on these charges, but, you know, at a point he can't run away much more. And, of course, he's got all the state senate that are probably all looking to get his job or get, you know, moved up in some fashion. You know, at least some of them have, you know, access to grind, and they may push him out anyway. So I think he's on the short track, if you will. But then the problem gets worse because the person that's the leader of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, while she doesn't have 92 and, you know, ethics charges by any means, she has a real ethical dilemma because she, in a lot of ways, lied on documents that are legal and official that you don't lie on. She was trying to get a loan application, trying to say what her salary was. She said that it was $125,000, and she ended up making about a fifth of that. It was $22,000. You know, I don't know about y'all, I could probably name my salary within $1,000 or $2. Now, of course, you know, things change throughout the year, and there's this much withheld or that much withheld, and it changes a little, but, I mean, that's like $1,000 off. This is like $100,000 off. Tim, how big a deal is this?
And she lied on an application to get a job. I mean, now she's trying to claim, oh, well, I'm going to have to look into this, her spokesman said. That don't sound right. And the guy that got the application said, well, you know, we didn't change anything. I mean, she had to have done this unless somebody had, you know, all of this personal information about her, like her Social Security number and this and that and the other, and filled it all out for her. Now, who does that, you know? And, I mean, it just looks, it stinks to high heaven. And once again, it seems like the same people keep popping up with just nonsense like this. I mean, you know, they said, well, they can't prove anything that she actually filled it out. So I guess she's going to deny it and hope that it goes away until the next thing comes up. They could do better than her. You know, that again, the bottom line. Right, Catherine?
Well, yeah, and I thought that the whole thing was a little odd. So the reason, it seems like the reason she put that number, I mean, I'm just assuming from reading the article, was that the job was scheduled to pay $110,000 annually. It was a development job, a fundraising job for the medical center in South Carolina.
Yeah.
And it was scheduled to pay $110,000. Well, she had said either in her interview or in the application that she expected to be making the same amount that she was making currently, which was $125,000. They ended up hiring her with no experience to do these things. She had no experience. And they ended up hiring her at $120,000, which was $10,000 over what the original rate was, but less than what she apparently had demanded. But what I think is odd is that So she was basically claiming this amount so that she could, I guess, you know, get them to pay her more than what they were listing the salary as. But she had no experience. I mean, it's just a weird story. And why did they hire her?
Well, because she's a state senator.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they hired her because of her position. The medical industry seems to be big on this lately, as we know from Georgia and their lobbyists hiring. This is just a chance to get a state senator, obviously one that was on the fast track upward.
Oh,
they,
now wait
didn't
a
check
minute,
out.
David.
They didn't check
you're
into this,
you're
and they
not
got taken
suggesting
on the salary.
You're not suggesting they'd buy off a politician, are you?
Yeah, not only did they buy off, they paid apparently five times more than they had to.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, but it, it,
you know, continues on. Nikki Haley came in, you know, before she was elected to office. There were scandals around her, you know, different ones you could say were personal, not public. But this is public. I mean, this is definitely lying on a job application. I know a coach of a university you're fond of tried to get a job at another university and got drummed out within a week for lying about his resume in a way I would say is not near as bad as what George O'Leary
did. That's right.
Yeah, and during that time, I think he was not the only one that was taken down for embellishing a resume, things
right.
like that, and it was seen as this bad thing. Well, I mean, you know, obviously we hold, you know, football coaches up to a pretty high standard, but you would just think that we would hire the chief executive of one of our 50 states to an even higher standard, wouldn't you, Catherine?
Yeah, or someone raising money for a hospital. I mean, either one of those situations is bad.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
The good
job she was looking at was not governor at that point.
Where are the good government groups at in all of this? I mean, they're out there, and you know the little video I saw on her. All I saw was the state Democratic Party chair sitting there saying something. Where are the good government groups? The ethics in government groups, and they're around. You know, we know who they are. Where are they in all of this? Aren't you a little surprised that they seem to be silent over there?
No.
That they may not have any pull. You would think they would get quoted in articles and whatnot. I mean,
yeah.
You do that even if you don't have many members
they
or much
go
of a budget.
They could go loudly to the press if they couldn't do anything else.
You'd think. I mean, and, you know, and South Carolina has always been noted for having some media sources that were pretty good at covering politics. I think Lee Bandyant, and he kind of one of the more famous reporters from in Southern politics. And so you would think that more would be said. And I'm sure that, I mean, obviously when this thread I saw had 172 comments on it and very few supportive ones. I think I saw one place where they called the paper the fish wrapper. But beyond that, it was pretty much saying, you know, what in the world is she doing?
And I bet there's a lot of Republicans that were saying that, too, in that article, you know, in those comments.
Yeah, I mean, people get that, you know, if you're lying on a resume and you're trying to do, you know, get a job that you're not qualified for just because of your position, no matter what party you're in, if you want to be honest about this thing, you see that it stinks.
Right.
And we'll see what the fallout, you know, from it is. In coming weeks. But one more South Carolina story. Now, this one's got a little more of a national flavor, but Mr. Get Involved in Every Race across the country, Jim DeMint, you know that he wouldn't sit the 2012 Republican nomination out. And last time he, for president in the South Carolina primary, he endorsed Mitt Romney, and apparently that was just, you know, wanting to endorse somebody besides John McCain. He had a bone to pick with John McCain. Well, now he's, you know, probably won't repeat on his backing of Mitt Romney unless Mitt Romney repudiates his own work in the Massachusetts health care law, which many people will say is similar to President Obama's health care bill. Catherine, what do you make of all this with Jim DeMint?
Well, I think that this is going to be the issue for Mitt Romney. I think a lot of people on the right are very critical of the Massachusetts healthcare situation, and I think that this is going to be the thing that probably brings him down in the primaries. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised that DeMint would be outspoken about it.
Yeah, if DeMint is latched onto it, you can just bet that Tea Party activists will. And unless the Tea Party activist vote gets split 10 ways, then Mitt Romney has no chance going very far. Tim, what's
unless
your take
he,
on
unless he
Jim
criticizes it.
Well, but then still they could just say he's flip-flopping like he did on abortion, and they got him for that in 2008. That's one of the things that hurt him then.
Well, I agree with Catherine. It could hurt him in the primaries. Now, where it's going to just kill him is a state like Iowa, which I'm going to assume he's not going to contest too hard in those caucuses. he's going to win New Hampshire, you know. I don't think DeMint withholding his support would hurt so much in the general election. I mean, if Romney happens to be the nominee, would DeMint just sit the whole thing out? The guy wants to be the majority leader in the Senate. He wants to be the next one if the Republicans take over. Withholding support from a party nominee would not be probably the best way to achieve that. So he's got the teabaggers on one side and the establishment on the other. He's got to kind of walk a tightrope here. That being said, if DeMint is not going to support Romney, well, then who? Newt?
Yeah, I mean, that. Then it becomes who. And
yeah.
That, of course, gets into who fills out the field. Because, obviously, Mike Huckabee was in the race last time. He didn't endorse him last time. So
he ain't going to run.
Something was
he
wrong with
run.
Him.
I don't think he's going to run. And I don't think if Palin does run, that DeMint will get within 50 miles of her if he can help it. I know I certainly won't, but that's another story. So then is the obvious choice Newt?
I don't know. I think DeMint wants to back somebody that's a real player in this thing, and that's, you know, how much of a player can be. Here's my question.
I was going to say, just ask one more question, and then I want you to take off with it. If Newt ain't the guy that would benefit from a Romney collapse, then who's next?
You know, that's a much tougher question to see who will run, who won't. I mean, people don't even think about right now. Like, apparently they did polling, and Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey polls well. I mean, there's so many names that could possibly fill this thing out. But this is, speaking of people not running, as big a player as Jim DeMint is, getting himself involved in races as far west as Nevada, why is Jim DeMint not running?
He wants to be the Senate Majority Leader.
Yeah, who blames him? I'd want to do that too.
But isn't the job of the White House just a little bigger than the Senate Minority Leader?
He's a smart politician, and he knows he'd be a regional candidate, and he could not possibly win. He can be the Senate Majority Leader.
No, here's the thing. I think Jim DeMint could win the Republican primary. Now, Catherine, you said you think that the Senate Majority Leader is a bigger job than the presidency?
I think, I mean, if it were up, if I could pick which job I wanted, I would definitely pick Senate Majority Leader. I think the Senate is the place to be, myself.
Yeah, I just, you know, if going down in history, if you want to be, you know, above the chalkboard in every classroom, or maybe a third of the classrooms in America, that kind of thing, the presidency for historical value has more of that. But the thing I think is, as big a Republican as Jim DeMint is, and a lot of folks are, I think a lot of them know that you can win the nomination, but you can't win the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of them are starting to say the president's really not as vulnerable as they think. He may have been vulnerable, his party may have been vulnerable in the midterm elections, but that won't necessarily translate in the general. And so,
let me ask you something,
Jim
David. Don't
you
think Jim DeMint has probably done a little checking around and polling on what we're talking about? And I bet you he found out what I think I know, and that is he would get killed among independent voters because he's too polarizing,
just like Sarah
Palin.
Yeah, that was the topic this week on Chris Matthews. If
mm-hmm.
all the Republican nomination is just the crazies, and to me that's probably an overwhelming majority of the Republican office holders and activists at this point, how can the, you know, more calm Republican message shine through? The problem is the people that are more calm and rational in the Republican Party have been pushed to the back of the room, and crazies dominate. So they've kind of created their own problem, if you will, and Jim DeMint's just one of the ringleaders. Now, another name that we'll probably get to later in the show, because I'm thinking we've got to get into our guest here in a little while, is Haley Barbour. That's somebody that if he gets forward, I could see him possibly, Jim DeMint backing him, because Jim DeMint seems to have more of a southern
maverick feel to his who he likes, as opposed to, say, the intellectual conservative think tank feel that Newt Gingrich has. So therefore, I kind of think that that not cultural, but that style difference may come into play in who he buys.
I still think he's a practical man, though. I really do. Even though he appeals to the, you know, the flamethrowers and such, I still think this guy is a cold, calculating politician. I'm not going to sell him short.
Yeah, and then, of course, that becomes more interesting if who he backs, and then, of course, what Lindsey Graham you know, does in the race. And everybody's talking about DeMint, not about Graham. Now, I believe Graham actually has he's up for re-election in 2012, so that's probably much more on his mind than presidential politics, particularly in the primary. But that may affect it, too. He may want to try to
Don't you know he'd like Jim DeMint's endorsement, huh?
Yeah. He might be willing to piggyback on Jim DeMint's endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that depends on who gets in. Because, you know, Lindsey Graham was a big backer of McCain, and if DeMint doesn't like McCain, then he maybe have problems with Graham, if you will. So we shall see. Well, since we've got a little extra time more than I thought we would, let's go ahead and get into Haley Barbour. There were three more Haley Barbour presidential stories. Now, just a few weeks ago, we were saying Haley Barbour, you know, he's done for. And the reason that we probably thought he was done for is because, just like they reported this week, if you start to Google Haley Barbour, after it comes up a whole list of derogatory terms like racist and racial comments and race problem, and I'm trying to pull it up and can't get it pulled up quick enough. I guess I have a Google problem, although I'm just clicking on a link. Here it is, racist, civil rights, something about license plate, Haley Barbour and watermelon. I don't know, maybe that's his favorite fruit, and there's nothing to be ashamed of there. Anyway, all this problems come up. Is this the kind of thing that could torpedo his chances, Catherine?
Well, I mean, it's an indicator of his problem. I don't know that his Google results are going to fail his campaign, but they indicate some problems that he has on racial issues that I think could cause problems for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just,
I mean, I don't strictly the Google
come up. Racist is the number one after his name. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Tim, what did you make of this these Google findings, if you will?
Well, look, I don't think he can get by that, quote, Southern thing. He sounds it, he talks it. Many around the country thinks he believes a lot of this stuff. In my heart of hearts, I am having a lot of trouble seeing how he can pull over, I don't know, 5 to 10%. You know, across the board, if I could make a correlation in the Democratic field in recent years, it was when Lieberman ran, and about 10% was about as far as he went. You know, he really looks his age. And then you look at Mitt Romney, who is a similar age, and he doesn't look it. That deep, deep Southern drawl he has, these things add up. And there's other things, too, you know, about his running. It's obvious now from one of those stories that we were looking at. I'd always heard about his wife. Well, his son don't want him to run either. So his family is really not wanting him to run for president. I know what he's going to try to do. He's going to try to finish second in New Hampshire, like I've already mentioned before. That's why he's hiring heavyweights there. Finish second and then turn south, and that's his only slender road to the nomination, hoping the others stumble. That's it.
Yeah,
that's what he's got.
He's covered all our stuff here. And
I'm sorry.
Haley Barbour and watermelon, that's a racial thing that he did back in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss thing, that has some racial implications. The license plate, that has to do with the Ku Klux Klan, Nathan Bedford Forrest license plates, as if an, the front of those same pickup trucks in Mississippi with the South will rise again or whatever aren't enough. He wanted to have Nathan Bedford Forrest license plates. But, Tim, you touched on another issue. His son done wanted him to run. Catherine, when you saw that, what did you make of it?
I thought it was a, you know, another indicator that he's really not ready for prime time if he can't even get his son to. Oh, well, his son did say he would support him, but he didn't want him to run. I don't know.
Yeah, and
David, you,
Tim,
but
you
I gotta tell you, I gotta tell you guys that what would you rather? I mean, would you? As supporters of the of President Obama, wouldn't you just love to see those debates between Haley Barbour and President Obama?
Yeah, it would almost be like a debate for one of those congressional or Senate races in 1870 during Reconstruction, wouldn't it? I'm sure Haley Barbour would have more polish than that.
You mentioned Google. A lot of people use it. And you mentioned the list of things. Political websites, I noticed, scattered about, are mentioning stories, Haley Barbour's Google problem. People are going there and finding this stuff. They're looking for this stuff. They hear about it, and they're looking for it. Words get I just don't think he's going to make it.
And he just hired, and I want to finish up with this before I bring on our guest. He just hired John McCain's chief strategist from New Hampshire. I mean, obviously a pretty sought-after heavyweight, seeing that John McCain always did well in New Hampshire, particularly in 2000. You know, he continues to assemble the staff. You can tell he's going to make a major stand in this New England state. And this is a state that's very conservative, but this is a state that probably doesn't care a lot about race because it's not very diverse. So, therefore, all this racial stuff is just going to, if not seem repulsive to them, is going to seem completely off topic to what they care about. So I don't know how far he'll go in New Hampshire. Well, let's go ahead and turn and welcome our guest, President of the Georgia Young Democrats, Jane Bradshaw. Welcome, Jane.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, good to come on the Kudzu Vine. Well, I understand that on Crossover Day, Young Democrats do some special things to support Democrats. On that day, tell us about your efforts.
Well, for the past couple of years, we've had lobbying efforts, and we gather young Democrats from across the state and gather at the state capitol and work with our legislators, work with other lobbyists, work with progressive organizations, and help lobby on issues and bills that are important to us as young Democrats. This year we had a good group down there. We lobbied on a couple of important bills, including the Sunday alcohol sales bill, and that passed the Senate, so that one's now on to the House. We also lobbied on SB 210, which was the bill that would make it easier for doctors who perform abortions to be sued, regardless of the reason. We lobbied against that bill. Unfortunately, despite our efforts, we've sent notes to each member of the Senate, be they Democrat or Republican, to let them know how strongly we oppose this bill. Despite our efforts, SB 210 did pass. So unfortunately, that will go on to the House. And those were our two big lobbying efforts. The other thing that we've done in the past, and we also did this year, was we baked cookies for the Democratic House members and Senate members. And we passed those out to all the members at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they were very ready for a much-needed sugar boost. They came up and they said thank you. And I was actually just at an event with a number of young progressives, and several of our state legislators were there, and they, again, thanked me for doing that. And so I'm very grateful for all the young Democrats that were involved, not only in the cookie baking, but in being at the state capitol and lobbying and talking with our elected officials. I think that's one of the most important things that we can do as citizens is directly speak with our elected officials and let them know how we feel and how what we expect of them.
Yeah. So these cookies are good, right? They smell good, they look good, they taste good?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Well, why don't you put these cookies to the test and give them to some Republicans and see if you can sway some votes? I mean, we need some help down there.
Well, you know, we've thought about that in the past, but we want to reward those who support the views that we believe in and who support us not only on legislative issues, but also in the community and financially. A lot of our state legislators are some of our biggest supporters, and we want to let them know how much we appreciate all of their hard work. So the cookies are just a very small token of our appreciation to our state legislators.
Well, Jane, I want to ask you a serious question before I pass it around to Catherine and Tim. You mentioned this the bill where doctors that perform abortions could be sued. Where do the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association stand on this bill?
You know, that's a very good question, and I am not familiar with their position on that bill. I think it'd be better to ask one of them. I'm unfortunately not familiar with that position.
Yeah, because my thinking was that it may be that lawyers that do lawsuits on medical malpractice might, you know, say this shouldn't be any different. And that's a group that's very Democratic, and Republicans are always into, you know, protecting any type of, you know, restricting any kind of lawsuit. So it could be where, you know, kind of made for strange political alliances. I was just curious about that. Well, Catherine, what are some of your questions for Jane on the crossover day?
Hi, Jane. It's nice to have you on the show tonight. We always appreciate
it
from the Young Democrats. I was just wondering if there were any other bills that the Young Democrats were, you know, just sort of peripherally lobbying about. And I just wanted to take a second to clarify that abortion bill for David because it isn't really I don't know if you know the details about that, David, but what it was
no, I don't.
After a woman, you know, a woman has to go through a whole process before they can get an abortion. They have to sign off on everything. And then after the abortion would be performed, anyone in the family could go back and sue that doctor, even though everything's been signed off on.
Not the patient.
So I would imagine that even though the trial attorneys might see some opportunity for legal fees and whatever, I'm sure that they, being, you know, generally friends of the left-leaning members of our party, would probably challenge the sort of legitimacy of such a law. I can't speak for them, but I think that everyone a lot of people recognize the flaws in that legislation. So anyway, I just wanted to clarify that. But
yeah,
and
this probably wouldn't be where you could, like if someone were to die during the procedure, which I'm sure is very, very rare, that wouldn't be a suable offense. It would be just, hey, they changed their mind kind of thing, which is
a whole other thing. Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. Yeah. So anyway, I was just – so back to Jane, sorry. I just wanted to see if – you know, I know that there was a lot of talk about the immigration bill, and I know that was passed crossover day, but I wondered if the Young Democrats did any lobbying on those efforts.
We definitely were very active on the immigration issue. We were speaking to as many legislators who would speak on the issue, and some unfortunately won't speak to us about it for whatever reason they have chosen. But those that would speak to us, we talked to them and said, you know, this is a very important issue. This is not a state issue. This is a federal issue. It needs to be handled at the federal level on a national basis because the state of Georgia is not equipped in any way, shape, or form to implement any legislation that the Georgia General Assembly could pass. You know, all the way down to our local sheriffs are just not equipped to do some of the things that the legislature is trying to impose. You know, especially these towns and counties with one sheriff, you know, if they have to transport somebody 3 or 4 hours to a detainment center and then drive back, that's 6 to 7 hours that county has no local law enforcement. And to me, that's just unacceptable. And I think most of the law enforcement community understands that as well. And I hope that, that the legislature will understand that we just don't have the resources, especially in the economic times that we are in, where budgets are short and being cut on a minute-by-minute basis. It's just not feasible, some of the things that the legislature is considering. So we definitely lobbied on those issues and spoke with as many folks as would talk to us.
And I would also imagine that the Young Democrats were very concerned about the situation with the Hope Scholarship, which unfortunately looks pretty dismal now that the governor has signed that bill. I'm not sure if there's any, do you see any path to, you know, reconsideration on all that?
Unfortunately, I don't. Before the signing of the bill, we had several action alerts that we sent out to our 4,000 members on the email list, urging them to contact their local representatives and local senators. We had requests for them to call their senators and representatives. We sent letters. We contacted the folks that we needed to support, including the legislators who didn't vote the right way the first time. We had a big push, and on the second vote, a lot of those House members who voted against HOPE, they changed their votes the second time, which I think just shows the power that, that young Democrats can have in this state and young people in general, that we can make a difference. And I talked to the staff of several of those people, several of the legislators who changed their votes. And they said that one of the reasons that they changed their votes is because they were contacted by a number of their young constituents who are currently or will soon be affected by the HOPE Scholarship and by the HOPE Scholarship cuts. But, Catherine, I don't think that there this session that there's anything that we can do to make the changes that we would like to see.
It's very sad. Okay, I'm going to turn this over to Tim.
Speaking of Senate Bill 10, the Sunday liquor bill. How's that going to play out in the House?
You know, I think that it's probably going to be real close, but I think that it's going to pass. We're going to continue to lobby our legislators. We're going to continue to talk with them and continue to push the message that it's a local issue. And I think it was a Senator Balfour who said, you know, I'm supporting this bill because it's a local issue, but when it comes to the ballot box, I'm going to vote against it. And I completely
Mullis.
Support it. Was that Senator Mullis? Okay, I couldn't remember which one that was. But, you know, and I think that that's a perfectly acceptable stance. It is a local issue, and I think that it should be decided by the municipalities and the counties.
But you think the votes are there in the House perhaps to get it out then, huh?
That's what I'm hearing. That the votes are there, that we may need to do a little more pushing, and we definitely will be doing some more pushing, but that the votes are there, that it can pass.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about one more bill that's coming out of the Senate, and the reason I wanted to ask you about it was I'm on a certain state representative's mailing list, and he is on the Governmental Affairs Committee, and he's asking for opinions on this one. This Senate Bill 160, which would allow public utilities and other companies who are regulated by the Public Service Commission to make campaign donations to state legislators. Is there any chance this will pass House, and will the Young Democrats work this one?
Well, you know, I would like to say that no, there's no chance, but I think that we both know that there is a chance that it can pass because there's so many friends of the public utilities down in the state legislature. So many of them, you know, already receive backdoor campaign contributions that skirt the law, that are perfectly legal, but are still backdoor. The Young Democrats do not support this legislation. It is a way to further influence legislators who directly impact these companies' bottom lines. And it is, in my opinion, not a piece of legislation that I think that should ever pass. It is not a form of free speech. It is a form of lining the pockets of those who regulate you.
Amen.
And, And I don't think that there's any way that the Young Democrats could ever work for that. And if it does look like something's going to happen on it, we will work against it.
Thank you, Madam President. David?
Hey, Jane, I understand that y'all are having a convention coming up. What can you tell us about that?
We are. Thank you so much for asking. We're very excited. We are having our convention on the coast. It's April 15th through the 17th, which is just 3 weeks away. And it is on St. Simon's Island, just outside of Brunswick. We're very excited. We have a great lineup of programs and of speakers. We have young Democrats from all across the state coming down. We're really looking forward. We're having members of the newly elected executive committee of the Democratic Party of Georgia. They'll be speaking on Saturday at our luncheon. We're also having an awards program on Saturday evening, as well as elections for all of the Young Democrats of Georgia executive committee positions. But some of the great programs, we're having a program on how can we support unions in a right to work state, especially with everything that's going on up in Wisconsin. It's a really important topic that we need to talk about and re-educate people about why unions are so important, especially in a right to work state. We've also got Christine Pelosi, yes, the Christine Pelosi, coming down and doing a program on grassroots organizing and things as simple as how to organize your precinct. How do you find out who's in your community and how do you reach out to those people and find out what they're thinking about and what's on their mind? We're also having a couple of other different panels on fundraising, on membership and recruitment, and some stuff for our chapter presidents to help them be better chapter presidents, to be better organizers and administrators, you know, the more nitty-gritty kind of stuff. So I'm very excited about our convention, and if anybody needs more information on how to register and to attend the convention, I'm happy to provide that. You can go to our website as well. It's Georgia, spelled out, YDS.org, and we have a convention drop-down menu with all of the information about how to register. If anybody's interested in sponsoring our convention and getting some name recognition in our program and also in our public events, we would love to have that. We also have a number of young Democrats who want to come to convention, but because of financial reasons, mostly because they're in school and don't have the financial capability to pay for them themselves, we have a number of Democrats who would love to be sponsored to have their registration fees paid for and a few other little expenses. So if anybody's interested in that, you can contact me directly. And my email address is president@georgiyds.org. And I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Yes. Well, that sounds like a great event. Well, Jane, we've got one more topic we plan to talk about, and it's Georgia-related. And it has to do with the census and the new numbers. You can stay on with us since you're probably familiar as a Georgia resident and political leader in Georgia, or you can head on off, your choice.
I'd actually like to talk because that's something that we've been working on too, so I'll be interested in hearing what y'all have to say.
Yeah, we'll come around to you as well. Well, the new numbers came out, and most every district in Georgia gained some residents, but some were under the target, I think, Sanford Bishop, John Lewis and Hank Johnson's districts are under the new target, even though they all grew. But then some districts grew wildly, like Lee Woodall's 7th district. And I actually saw where that district has, the minority population in that district is 40%. But, of course, on Election Day, it hasn't shown that in recent years. And, of course, that's a vexing problem to Democrats. Tim, when you saw these numbers, what do you think it's going to mean for the 14th District of Georgia?
I want to go a little further than that. Okay. And I want to turn my attention to Sanford Bishop. The Republicans have a real chance right here to get a little creative. And if they add the 60,000 right voters, he is in huge trouble, and as for the new district, I'm going to stick Cherokee, Forsyth, Gwinnett Hall area the leadership, you know, in Atlanta is all from that area, and that's where the huge growth is. Anyway, that district is going there. We had talked about a pure Northwest Georgia district. It's not going to happen. I really think that district is going Northeast Metro, just my guess.
Yeah, and if you look, you can take off 200,000 of Woodall's voters. You can take 131,000 of Gray's voters, probably more than that. And there's a third of the, well, actually close to half of what you'd need for a district right there. Now, of course, they'll move some other folks around. They'll move some out of Price, some out of Gingrey to give some of those to, probably they'll take more than that out of Graves' district, that kind of thing. But you can see where the numbers would point to that. And then, of course, you know, what they do creatively, you know, because, of course, that would give Republicans one more vote. But they get greedy, like you're saying, and try to get Sanford Bishop or even
well,
John Barrow or more.
No, I'd go after Bishop.
Yeah, I'd go after Bishop. Cause
I don't know, they can't, without weakening.
It was such a close race this past election. It was so close that they must see, you know, the potential there.
Yeah, but then, of course, I think Democratic numbers will be better in a presidential year. Sanford Bishop will probably be a little more alert to what's going on than he was this time, so that'll be two things not in their favor. Jane, what are your thoughts on redistricting and the new numbers?
Well, David, you mentioned something very interesting when you first started on this, and that's how we have these great groups of minority voters in these areas, but they're not registered and they're not voting. And that's one of the things that the Young Democrats are going to be focusing on over the next year and a half before the 2012 election is registering some of these minority voters. We've got a lot of folks in the Latino, Hispanic, and Asian communities who are eligible to vote, but for whatever reason are not registered. And if they're not registered, they can't vote. So we're going to be focusing efforts on registering a lot of these communities that don't have a significant voice in the state legislature or in the U.S. House. And those are going to be where our efforts are, regardless of how the congressional districts are drawn. We're going to be registering voters, and that's going to be, and then getting those voters out to the polls is what our focus is going to be on.
Hey, Jane, do you agree that Sanford Bishop will be a prime target in this redistricting thing?
Definitely. I think that they're going to do everything they can to draw him a district that he will have a very difficult time winning.
Yeah.
Now, whether that passes the Justice Department is another question, but I think that will be their goal.
David, you with us?
Well, we might have lost David, guys. I'm not sure. The clock on the wall is approaching the midnight hour on us, and if we have lost David, then we'll talk to him next week. But Jane, if you're still with us, and I hope that you are, I wanted to ask you how it looks in redistricting on the legislative level.
Well, I have not looked at the hard numbers because they're so new, but I think that we're going to have a fight. We're going to have to do whatever we can to maintain what we've got and not lose some of our more vulnerable districts. And we as Democrats are really going to have to reach out to these folks that live in these marginal areas that have, you know, that lean red or that barely lean Democrat, and make sure that they realize that we need them as Democrats. And that's something that we have not done in the past, and I think we need to work very hard. I think the DPG knows that that's a big part of their new strategy, and I think that we're going to work hard towards that goal.
So you think we've got a real weakness in this process with our rural remaining Democrats?
Yeah, we're going to have to make sure that we shore them up and that we keep them strong and that we let them know that we're there to support them, both with feet on the ground and financially. And that's the only way that they're going to win and keep their seats.
Okay. With that, Jane, I'd like to go ahead and thank you for being with us tonight on the Kudzu Vine.
It,
you're, our house is your house anytime. You've told us some great stuff. We're going to be watching what you guys do, and we hope to have you on again, maybe at the conclusion of the legislative session, for a wrap-up on all this.
Well, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it, and I greatly appreciate the invitation and would love to come and speak again. So thank you so much.
All right. And Catherine,
again,
we lost David. We lost David.
Oh, wait, but
somewhere.
I got back.
I got back.
My daughter came to say goodnight, and as I muted the – I closed my hand over the phone, I hung myself up. So, you know, got to be a good father and host a radio show. It gets tough.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yep. Well, good night for March 20th, 2011.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thanks,
we are the heirs of that first revolution.